Hello and welcome to Behind the Journey. On this show, I speak to Dan Higginson about his journey with WAPTA. So as promised, everyone, I've got Dan Higginson on the podcast today. Dan is a long friend of mine. He may not admit this, but he carried me through university. He signed me into lectures that he probably shouldn't have signed me into, and he supported me on my little path whilst at university. And since then, he's done some amazing stuff. I've been really kind of honored to see his journey and see his path through his career. And then, like I said on a few podcasts back, I received his branded products in the post, and I had to drag him on the podcast to not only show his story to you guys, but just also just have a fucking catch up, you know, because sometimes you go months, years, fucking probably decades, and sometimes not speaking to people you really want to speak to. And Dan's one of those guys. So, Dan, welcome to the show.
You're too flattering. Glad to be here.
Well, first of all, you actually listen to this pod, don't you?
Yeah. The first episode that you mentioned me on was the one that I skipped. So I didn't know you wanted me on until you messaged me. You want to be on the pod. But yeah, no, regular listener.
That sounds like a scam, mate. I actually don't believe you.
No, I know it's very true. Because you mentioned it again saying, yeah, and like a few later just saying that you were meant to text me. I was like, ah, not heard that one before. But yeah, too good to be true.
It is what it is, mate. It is what it is. So I want to go right back, mate. I want to go right back to the start of kind of when we first met. I want to know, because I don't believe you weren't looking at starting products, you weren't looking at starting businesses at that point, were you? And I want to go right back to that point and really find out kind of where did this journey start for you? When did this kind of entrepreneurial flair start with you and kind of go to present day really? So if you can rewind, first year of University of Lincoln, what happened?
I think my story is, I guess, quite different from the traditional one, because I tend to disagree with most of it. So I think you can learn entrepreneurial behaviors. You're not born it. I mean, you're very extroverted compared to me. I'm quite an introvert, but I think in general, it's something you learn. So when I came to uni, I hadn't had any experience starting anything up, never really even thought about it. But these were three people close to me. So I had you, I had my sister who was on her first startup at the time. And my sister's boyfriend at the time is a guy called Josh Turner. He runs a company called Stand for Socks, and they do quite well. So I had these three people around me, all very entrepreneurial, all doing their own thing. And that's just kind of like, yeah, this is cool. Maybe one day. So 3 years, I mean, I didn't particularly do anything particularly entrepreneurial at university. But yeah, head up into fourth year, that's when it kind of kick-started. But I'll give a bit of credit to yourself there and to the other people around me for kind of the inspiration.
Well, I just know that obviously, whenever I had like an issue with a dissertation or some coursework that I hadn't read properly or whatever, I'd always send you a message being like, Dan, I need some fucking help, mate. Like, and you would always be there. You'd always save me and carry me through it.
I remember that third year. I'd constantly saying to Matt, one of our other friends, it's like, he's not going to do it. He's not going to make it. He's too distracted.
Literally, I was trying to explain this the other day to somebody else. I was like, when I said I didn't go to third year, I'm fucking mean. I did not go to third year. Like, it was ruthless.
With Barry, our lecturer, you're lucky you got on with the lectures very well, because they knew what you were doing to a certain extent. I think they quite liked it. So,
well, I remember sending my dissertation to my dad like the night before, being like, hi, Dad, just he reads my dissertation. Let me know what you're thinking. He was like, yep, yeah, that's amazing, son. Like, well done. And then when I got my dissertation back, I got a 2.2 or something. I got a 2.1 overall. And I said, what did you actually think about my dissertation? He was like, it was absolutely horrendous. Like, it was terrible, son. Like, but it was so late that you couldn't fix it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was just gone.
There's no point in, like, crumbling you down over it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But so I kind of, like, you know, we've obviously kept in touch. We've obviously, like, we bump into each other every now and again. But I kind of, like, lost track of you, per se, when it came to your entrepreneurial flares until you had launched the brand. So if you can go from kind of like, you know, finishing third year, guiding me through my degree, you know, your full-time job of looking after me was now over. What happened?
Stressful. Yeah, so that's where, like I said, I'd seen what you'd been doing. I'd seen what other people had been doing. So I wanted to move to a different city. Didn't want to stay in Lincoln as much as I loved it. So I went to Nottingham Uni, studied entrepreneurship. And I was then surrounded by, it was a class of 40 of us, four of us were English. The rest were all from all over the world. Good friend of mine from Madagascar. So I had all these different cultures, but everyone was so invested into either their idea or just the idea of having a startup. So every day people would be in the startup labs. They'd be running through different things, and just being surrounded by that mentality was just incredible. So that's where the idea for WAPTA kind of first started, alongside with just other ideas that my friends had. So that was kind of like the day one of it all. In terms of WAPTA and where we went from there, it's because I'd seen what my sister had done at the time. I see what you were doing, both very service-based industries, and it can be a while in service. You don't see the immediate return. And I don't know, I guess I'm a bit more, I want to see the result instantly. So I was like, I want to go into buy and sell. But within eyewear, which is where I am, I didn't want to go into sunglasses because it's horrendously busy, very competitive, a lot of noise. How are you going to break into that? Especially, it just targets anyone from the age of 10 upwards. You're covering everyone. So we were trying to find our niche within that. And that's where we kind of stumbled across reading glasses. It's quite a big market. It's a growing market. Over 14 million pairs sold a year, but no established brand. And you're targeting a very specific age group of plus 40 onwards. So the idea really developed in first year.
So, I mean, the question I have straight away is that you went from third year to fourth year, and in fourth year, you decided to do entrepreneurship. Was it just the people around you, you seen them doing entrepreneurial ideas that led you into that path? Or, I mean, to go from just doing marketing to doing entrepreneurship is kind of like, it's quite a leap.
Yeah. No, it's like I said to you, I've seen the behaviors of people like yourself and what they've been doing. So it's been in the back of my mind. Eventually,
but that's really crucial to me, because that wasn't a normal behavior, because there was God knows how many people on our course, and no one else I know of did that. Do you know what I mean? So there've always been, you know, you don't just go and decide to do a fourth year in entrepreneurship unless it's, you know, really at the center of who you are. So I don't believe your idea that you saw a few people doing a decent job and you thought, you know what, I'll do entrepreneurship. Do you know what I mean? Like, that is just not for me. It must have been more to the core of you than that.
I guess, I mean, we could probably then take it back into, you know, just at school, who was it who created the five-a-side football team and entered us into a league? It was, you know, I did 100%. That for my mates. And maybe it's like the little things you add up there.
I get frustrated. I agree. I get frustrated when my mates can't organise things. I'm like, it pisses me off when no one does anything. I'm like, let's do something. Right. And I think you've always had that as well. So I believe that, you know, you said that entrepreneurship is a learned behaviour. I agree there's elements you can learn, but I still believe that at the core of you, there has to be something. You know, you can't go from like a complete non-entrepreneur to, you know, an entrepreneur. You've got to have some base to you. So yeah. I agree that you have seen behavior around you, but there was definitely something inside of you that was willing to start something.
I'll add on that then, actually, because it's something I just thought of now, but my uncle, he's had his own business since I was young, and he's someone I've been surrounded by. So it's going to be something that's just been throughout my years. This is a behavior that's cool and something I want to be a part of, and maybe it's not something that I immediately clicked with, but yeah, I would be lying if I said I wasn't surrounded by it, and there's probably some innate behaviors there.
Yeah, 100%. So talk to us about you. You've come up with this concept, you've gone after, you know, reading glasses, which is obviously, I've always said, a niche is a beautiful place to be. You've done exactly that. You could have gone just for glasses. You could have just gone for sunglasses. You went for reading glasses. A beautiful. I remember when you told me the concept, I loved it straight away. Very difficult market to get involved with. You've got manufacturing and production, you know, which is probably like, it's very hard. It's not quite hardware, but it's like, you know, it's not far from that. So talk to me about the process. You've come up with this concept. What happens next?
So where we are right now, we've pivoted quite a bit, I guess, from the original idea. The original idea was because I saw this market. It's a boring market. They treat the customers poorly. And all the glasses are really standardized and boring. So the original idea was like, let's just create a fun pair of glasses. People are going to want this. So I was like, where can I get this product from? I didn't want to go down the Alibaba route. Mm. Didn't want to, I don't know, not tarnish my brand like that. But I'd spent a few months building up this, you know, nice brand image. And I was like, oh, let me continue with that. So I went to a mentor I had in fourth year, my first year of my master's. And she gave me a third party agent that I could go to. So I went to them. They provided me all the manufacturers for the key brands, went direct to them, got the product. And we probably did our first launch in 2018, which I just don't really talk about. But that was the first like proper failure because that wasn't an eco-friendly product. We had no point of differentiation. And I had whatever the minimum order value, order quantity was, which I can't remember off the top of my head. It would have been small, probably like 500 pairs, just stock at my parents' house that I couldn't sell. So I immediately then kind of pivoted, found the eco-friendly material that I wanted, went direct to this Italian manufacturer. And then that's the process I've gone with now. But if I didn't pivot, yeah, we'd just be sitting on a lot of stock that we can't sell.
So when you got them from the Italian manufacturer, did you have a minimum order of quantity as well?
Yeah, also had to hit that. But it's one that you kind of go back to the classic minimal viable product. And I think although it was a failure of the first order that we got, very good learning. I thought I knew what people wanted just by going straight into it. It just wasn't. I had to then do more market research, figure out what people wanted, do some test Facebook ads. And then when I went through and actually committed with this Italian company, I'd done quite, you know, months of research to find the material I wanted. I'd spoken to numerous suppliers who worked with that manufacturer to actually be able to produce the glasses. So I was quite confident hitting that minimum order quantity.
See, for me, you know, you're starting a new business. It was your first business, I think, right?
First business, yeah.
Yeah, so you start a new business, you create the product, you think you've got it nailed on, and you put an order with for 500 products, right? I've been doing business for a long fucking time in terms of my age span, and I would have shat myself doing that. I have never, thinking through it, I've never created a business where I've had to bulk buy stock up front.
I saw it as a positive going into this niche is because whereas if you're going into sunglasses, you're getting one lens, one style. It's very easy. You kind of know what you want. Within reading glasses, you have different strengths. So you've got all the way from plus 0.5 to plus 4. And it goes with like 0.25 increments it can do. So it's quite, in terms of going into a market, I was thinking people aren't going to go into this because it requires a little bit of upfront capital and people want that easy, you know, let me just get something really cheap so I can do it really easily. So I was like, I can feel confident with it in that sense. And we got samples and everything, but yeah, I mean, it was a big move and one that backfired, but.
Because the other thing as well, like if you're looking at reading glasses, like you'd find trends, right? I mean, you all know this better than me, obviously. Like you'll find that you sell more plus 2.5s than you will plus 4s. And did you just buy like the same even number of every single one?
No, I talked to a shop beforehand and they told us the kind of split. So
nice.
Plus 2.5 tends to be the most popular. So we can order a lot more of those than we can of others. It is a bit of a guess game to begin with because you don't know how your customer's going to react. But yeah, I think we were okay with that because we knew a little bit of information to hit the minimum order quantities of the lower plus like plus 0.5 plus 1. But yeah, no, I think we were quite good in terms of the initial order with them.
How many do you have of them left?
We've got around $8,000 worth of stock
that you can't ever sell
them right now. Oh, sorry, you're talking about the first one.
Yeah,
no, we shipped through tens of them and then I think we just dumped them at like some charity shop.
Doing your bit for the world.
Got rid of them. I mean, they weren't even selling them. Couldn't even sell them like a unit.
Yeah, but you don't want to walk into the garage and just see failure every single day. Like, I'm going to give them to a charity shop.
Exactly. I don't want to ever see them again.
So do you put that sole failure down to no unique selling point? Now, talk to me why you thought that didn't work.
I would, yeah. Part of it, no, yeah, we didn't differentiate ourselves enough. There were brands out there that also had colourful glasses. As much as I can say it's a boring market, people sell colourful glasses. It's no biggie. They were just cheap. Yeah, just cheap glasses. I would put a lot of it down to, yeah, not the right product market fit.
Okay, so
you didn't have a story. There was no branding for it.
So you sat there, you've not shifted any. You've gone, okay, cool, I'm not giving up on this anyway. And how did you go out and find, you know, the perfect product for it? What was your next move?
Yeah. So just to go back on like the not give it up, it's because I was so confident in the market. I knew there was a gap in the market. I knew it was a good niche to be in. I just knew I hit it wrong. So I was like, let's just properly evaluate this and see what's the best way to do it. And that's where it's like, we know ethical consumption is a big growing trend. It is something that we wanted to get into anyway. So let's look at this from the right point of view. Plenty of talks with different suppliers trying to find the right material. It wasn't until we found, yeah, the right material, got directly in contact with the manufacturer of that material, who then could point us in the right direction of someone who can convert that into frames. And that, yeah, it was a longer process. That's taking around 6 months just to even get the samples on the first one.
Amazing. So where have you come from that process? Have you iterated the product much? Like, what's been the process from that point? Have you kept going? Has it been one iteration? What's been the move?
The main iteration was going environmentally friendly, because we had our point of differentiation. We, since launch, and let's see if you disagree with me, but my view on the plus 40 market, and, you know, I speak to my parents and their family friends a lot on it, is that they follow their children. So, you 100%. Know, all the kids are on Facebook. 5 years' time, all the parents are on Facebook. 100%. Same with Instagram. It's going to be the same with TikTok if it's not already becoming the same with TikTok. So I knew, like, the channels to get to people. So we've not really pivoted too much on the product side, but we, as soon as we got them, I knew the influencers I wanted to reach out to. Instagram is our main game, and it's been the best returning platform we've had for us.
Decent.
That's the question. I think I might have just gone after one.
You did wander a bit there, mate, but I do it a lot, so I wouldn't be angry. Yes, I think so. Obviously, you reignited my thought process for Wapta very recently. And I think I actually messaged you about 12 months ago and said, Dan, I'm seeing some hype around these blue light glasses. Do you do them? And you said no. And then roughly 6 to 12 months later, in the post, I received some blue light glasses. So tell me about the journey there as well.
Did you like them?
That me, I honestly, like I said to you, they're next to me. I wear them all the time.
Oh, yeah. Bang, isn't a paid, no paid sponsorship.
No paid
sponsorship. From Pete's mouth. Yeah.
I rock them. I rock them all the time. Also, I've got Ray-Bans, which you may have seen before. I've had them for years. They're absolutely banging. But I now wear your sunglasses instead of my Ray-Bans.
Perfect, you see. Number one fan.
True.
The only
disappointed thing I will say,
go on,
is that you know I wear black every single day and you sent me blue ones. That's yeah. But I've been told. I've been told the blue suit me better. So,
well, when I come to Lincoln in a couple of weeks, I'll bring a pair of the black sunglasses.
But they're banging, mate. I actually love them. Like, genuinely love them. I need some new ones anyway. But I prefer them to my Ray-Bans. Genuinely, they're sick.
Good. Yeah. Good to know. With the blue light, it was one where, yeah, you messaged me a while back about it, and I was always quite hesitant to go into, because the science supporting blue light, there's for blue light and there's against. And admittedly, since we were first having that conversation, the science for it has become a bit more popular. So I was just hesitant because I don't want to sell a product that I don't believe in, or a product that I know doesn't work, but it's just a hype. So that's why I didn't want to go into it at the beginning. However, there's a lot of demand for it. And actually, when you do look into it, I know quite a bit now about the blue light and the different wavelengths and how they impact the eyes. So I can understand the science behind it, which is why I'm comfortable to go into that.
So does it work, blue light glasses?
Yeah, so the way it works is, like, blue light is the most energetic form of wavelength. So it, like, penetrates towards your back of your eye. Now, blue light comes from everywhere, like from the sun. And it's good for you in the daytime. It helps with your circadian rhythm. It helps with you, you know, when you know it's daytime and you need to go out and do something. However, when you're staring at screens, which also emit blue light, a lot of the time that's throughout the day and it's towards the night, your mind's going, oh, it's daytime, I need to be active, yeah. Which is why you can struggle to get to bed, it can give you headaches. So there's a lot of bad things that come from too much artificial blue light. So blue light itself isn't actually a bad thing, it's really important. It's just staring at screens all day and screens at night isn't good. And that's where blue light glasses come in, because they filter out a certain percentage of the blue light.
Oh, wow. Well, I've noticed I wasn't getting headaches before, but my eyes would be really tired and really sore. Sore, that's an over exaggeration, but they were struggling a bit. And then the moment I started wearing blue light glasses, well, your ones, literally when I'm watching Love Island in bed, you know, absolutely perfect.
Oh, mate, we're going to run over a bit. You're going to have to miss out.
Yeah, I'm looking at that clock thinking, I'll catch up. We'll have to save my day today. But so I want to know, so obviously, you said it was always on the radar. So had you always planned out you're going to start with reading glasses, go blue light, go sunglasses, or was it just a case of you expanding the product range?
It was just a case of expanding. So my thoughts were always, we're staying within eyewear. I want to remain in the niche, and I want to remain the niche of the audience we've got. We've got a great audience. They really, they respond very well to our products. You know, we've got 5-star Trustpilot reviews. They really like it. So I don't want to now go diversifying into everything and anything. And also, whenever I speak to friends about it who aren't really, you know, they don't have their own business or something, it's like, oh, I'd buy these. You should target 20-year-olds. And I'm like, I don't want to. It's not my area to go targeting. But the idea was always to stay within eyewear, or at least products that complement eyewear. So it was reading glasses always going to be our number one. Sunglasses, because it's got, you know, it's a higher price we can put on it. Same with blue light. It was probably in the plan, but yeah, a bit earlier than we thought.
So you're selling sunglasses now, aren't you, on the site?
Yeah.
What split is it between reading glasses and sunglasses?
So we only launched sunglasses around 2-3 months ago. So since then, it's probably still a 60-40 going on towards a 70-30 split. Reading glasses are still our main one. I'll tell you this, actually, this is another learning curve for me. Buying reading glasses, you've got to hit those minimum order quantities because of the different strengths. Mm. When I went into sunglasses, I wanted to do sunglasses readers. But the issue was I was a bit scared of the minimum order quantity again, because it was a big investment I'd have to put behind it. So I went, okay, I'm just going to go into plain sunglasses. And I had a few returning customers message me, being like, oh, it would have been good if they were readers. So that's one where I'm kind of like kicking myself, because I was too scared to commit to the original idea I wanted to go for. And I always thought it's an easier backup to be able to just have these normal pair of sunglasses.
What are sunglass readers like? Are they literally like reading glasses with a tint to them?
With the tint, yeah. It's the same with blue. So with our blue light, we do have plain blue light that you're wearing, but we also have +1, +1.5, +2, etc. So those who still need their reading glasses can get the benefit.
How does that make sense from a sunglasses perspective, though? Like,
if you're going on holiday and reading a book on the beach,
obviously, yeah, that was dumb.
Fair questions on this.
Yeah, sorry, mate. I wouldn't say I'm like Louis Theroux with my questioning. I'll be honest with you. This is a part time gig for me, unpaid, unfortunately. The employer's crap. Yeah, that's cool, man. I think the whole thing's awesome. Do you think that you're going to see a more of a shift towards your other products, or do you think it's always going to stay with reading glasses? And also, follow-on question from that, is your marketing spend disproportionately weighted towards reading glasses as like a initial touch point, and then you hope people move on?
Yeah, exactly. Reading glasses, because it's the less busy one, that's how we're acquiring the customer, because that is more our point of differentiation. People are like, oh, I've got a brand that caters to me. And then we're using these products such as the sunglasses, and we're probably hopefully going to go into things like notepads, which complement the product, but ones where we can put a bit more of a higher cost, a higher price behind it. We'll make sure the quality's there, but that's where we want to see that kind of lifetime value come back.
Notepads,
people need them.
I don't like that at all.
Mate, you're the wrong age, that's why.
I know, I mean, I love it. I don't understand, but I want to hear your reasoning. From you growing an eyewear brand, which started with reading glasses, which is now moving to blue light and sunglasses, about why you believe that notepads are the next move. Making a premium brand.
Yeah, no, so, I mean,
the Ray-Bans make notepads, this is a good question, but carry on.
No, then the Ray-Bans, they're not really our, they're not even people that are on our radar, they're not for us. But you look at, like, Moleskine, do you know Moleskine notepads?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're getting £40 a notepad. Those, you know, I look, my dad's obviously a big help for me with this, and he's someone who's the target market for it. He's always got 2 or 3 notepads on the side. He's got his reading glasses there. So I'm looking for, how can I build out my website, my product offering? Reading glasses, of course, we've got more styles and more colors, which we'll be going into first. But I want to be able to offer kind of a complete experience. People can come to our website, they can get their glasses, but there'll be complementary products on the side. We're not going to go wild here, but it's really about, yeah, just diversifying the product mix.
I guess a big thing, knowing the sort of market you're in, is the average order value needs to be increased. Because have you got to the point at the moment with your acquisition costs of a customer where you've tried to scale it as much as you can, or what's your current positioning in terms of like market growth and stuff?
Yeah, customer acquisition costs for any e-commerce business is quite difficult with increased spend going on.
Mm.
We know I've tried a lot of things that we were talking before. Google Ads, it just isn't working for us at the moment. At the moment, I've tried various different affiliates. Some have worked, some haven't. And with affiliates, sometimes you have to put down a big tenancy. So, you know, we've had some costs there. Facebook ads seem to be scalable for us at the moment, and influencers, we get a good return on ad spend. So there are two kind of main channels.
Have you scaled Facebook ads as far as you can? Like, or are you just now just like, because obviously I don't know how you're running the business, but is it a case of like, you're waiting for cash to come in to put more money in? Like, how, is that how it works?
Yeah, that's how it works. And with some of the injections that we need for the stock, I've not been able to scale it that way in terms of just keeping it, you know, 50 to 100. So I think the most we've done a day is probably still around the 50 mark. It's one of those where, because we're still early on, we're using kind of like half my money. My dad's been very good, a very privileged position that my dad's able to help me out a bit, but my dad's helped me out. But there's not that much money within the business to be able to cover all areas. So if we were to do that, it would mean full concentration on one channel. And I want to kind of give it a bit of a broader mix right now.
What's the next plan? What's the next thing? What's the next big move? What's the end plan as well? What's the end plan? Give me the whole lot. From now, what's the plan?
So the plan is we've got a product that our customers really cater to. We want to go into different eco-friendly products. I've got a friend of mine who owns a different company. They sell ocean plastic sandals. I want to go into is they had some really good offerings on it before, but yeah, I want to kind of speak to that guy and go into different product offerings in terms of the environmentally side. I don't want us just to rely on the one material. We can then also go into different manufacturers just in case something goes wrong. So it's increase our product offering within readers, increase the colors. That's a 2-year plan right there. We've got a lot more that we can offer here. And then, yeah, remain within kind of the blue light and sunglasses to expand. I don't think we're at the point where we'd probably be looking for investment, but give it half a year, maybe I'm going to start be looking. We've taken out a coronavirus bounce back loan to help us with our last investment for the stock.
Thank you, Rishi Sunak.
Yeah. Funny.
Thank you,
yeah,
Rishi
exactly,
Sunak.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that's the plan. And like I said, it's remain within your niche.
Mm.
For me, I'm not trying to venture out into something that I don't believe in. So I want to stay within my area and grow that way. I can also see within eyewear, there's so many brands. They're all owned by one or two big companies.
There's an obvious category buyout, of course, is the place to be if you can be, you can differentiate yourself as like the eco-friendly brand. I invested in a business, which you may have heard on this podcast. I don't know if I've mentioned it before, that turns potatoes into plastic. And I think it could work well for your glasses. I've just thought about it.
You need to tell me what potatoes into plastic.
It's a company called Chipsboard. They turn potato waste into plastic.
Interesting.
And I got in on that EIS round.
So what's the end product?
Whatever you want it to be. I know fuck all about this business, honestly. But there's a guy that was part of my angel network who's a potato man, like genuinely potato man. Like he owns a big potato company. So I said to him, I'll invest.
Is that
if
what you
invest.
Want to be known as?
Yeah, if potato man. I'll invest if you invest. And he invested, so I invested.
It's the best way of doing it, you know. I think it's whenever it comes to like anything like politics or like Bitcoin that like we were talking about before, I'm not there. I'm not going to be able to get myself there. But I know the people who I look up to / respect, and I trust their judgment.
Yeah.
So if someone who I trust their judgment goes into something, I'm like, yeah, you know what?
Yeah, and I did that for potatoes. So basically the idea is that, you know, more brands are more eco-friendly and want to go more sustainable for their customers, and they can turn plastic from potatoes, and they're going to do it for like buttons on tops. And they've actually got a pair of glasses on their homepage of their website. I'm sure they have.
Yeah, send me the link after this.
Yeah, and I can give you the intro to the CEO if you want to have a conversation. I know nothing more. Honestly, I think it was like the founder of McCain's invested as well or something.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Honestly, bro, when I say I know nothing about this business, I know nothing about this business. It's hilarious. But yeah, if it might work. Can you imagine glasses made out of chips?
It'd be such a good catch line, something in there.
Yeah. And you could probably do it as a JV with them actually, and they could probably do it at a lower cost because they need to get to market.
Yeah, you'll have to send me the link afterwards and I'll have a look. The thing is, we use a very premium Italian material.
Yeah, this is chips.
Yeah, I mean,
this is moldy potatoes.
I'm going to be honest. Does it match up with what we're doing right now? Maybe not.
I'm going to start a rival product called Wapto, and it's going to sell potato glasses.
I like it. Yeah. Taking you straight to court.
That's the deal. I'll lose. Yeah. I took a massive detour there, man. I don't know where we're at. I think the thing that I wanted to get from you really is, because a lot of people listen to this podcast, not all of them are business people, entrepreneurs, but maybe they want to be, right? I want you to kind of go back to your process and try and give them some words of wisdom about, you know, how to get started, what things you had to learn to get started, and kind of any sort of advice for them really.
Yeah. The key one is you need to surround yourself with people who are doing similar things. And that's not necessarily people who you can hang out with. I was going to startup events, reaching out to different people who, you know, have their own podcast. So, do you know the Screw It, Just Do It podcast, Alex Chisnell?
No.
A virgin startup one. You're not a podcaster. So I was big podcast, big listener of podcasts. And then I've less so on now, but and he's getting.
Then you heard mine and stopped listening.
Yeah, I was like, God, I need to get out of this. And then books as well. You know, so there's some really key books. But the main one for me, I'm getting started for business, is it's an intimidating thing to do. So you need to really break it down into tiny steps. There's the thing, you know, you're not going to move Mount Everest, but moving a stone at a time, that kind of thing. And all those are behaviors that you need to learn. So that's behaviors in terms of like habits and just listening to the right people, breaking everything down and making sure you're focusing on consistency over intensity. That's something I still really struggle with. And it's the same with, you know, my physical health of exercise. I do intensity. I'll do I'm going for a marathon, for example, in October. But as soon as that's done, I'm not running because I'm just not great at doing the, I'd really dislike running. I don't know why I said I'd do it. But consistency over intensity, because you'll see the benefit of it. And it's, you know, I'm seeing it with WAPs, very early stage, but be consistent for 2 years and you'll get something that you're quite proud of.
Yeah, I love that. I think I got asked today by one of the guys in the office, what advice would you give yourself 10 years ago?
Okay.
And what advice would you give to someone else? And my advice for myself 10 years ago was just keep going. Because, you know, I'm where I wanted to be and dreamt of being. And my advice to someone else is stop caring what the people think. I truly believe that, you know, most of the time people don't start things because they care what other people think. Were you slightly worried when you started WAP to what other people would think?
Yeah. And in some respects, I'm quite lucky actually in the way that it's gone about. And this might be another topic of conversation, but because you started your business whilst at university, I started mine whilst I was still working. And every company I work for, they have in your contract that any idea you have belongs to them, or any business you have belongs to them. So I had to be quite hush with WAPTA. So I've never been the face of the brand. I've let the brand just guide itself. So I've been quite lucky that I've not had to put my face out there. I'm joining a new business in a couple of weeks, and they know full well about WAPTA and very happy for me to keep pushing it. And it's going to be a change because I'm going to put myself out there a bit more in terms of the face of the brand alongside with my dad. So it'll be interesting, you know, if we have this conversation again in a few weeks to see what my answer is then. But you do have the worries about what people would think. In general, I don't think it does impact me too much. I'm quite confident in myself. I mean, you've always been very confident in yourself, so I don't think it's ever really impacted you either.
No, but I think when I was younger,
cover it up quite well.
Yeah, I mean, when I was younger, when I was like kind of 15, 16, 17, I wasn't hugely confident. I think business makes you more confident, to be honest. I think it hardens you up. I've always believed that.
You have to put yourself out there a bit more.
Yeah, I just believe it toughens you up. I think it's one of the things that you go through in life which hardens you the most. Has anyone ever said anything to you where they thought it was a joke, but it really hit you hard, like in regards to business? You know, has someone ever got a product? Like, let's say they picked up one of your products and they said something was a joke, and you were like, "Oh, that hurt."
Yeah, I have that. I've got very supportive friends and family, and I'll give them all good credit. They're a good group of people, but they'll still make occasional digs at my product or at what I'm doing. Because we're still learning, we're still very early on. We make the mistakes, and they're good, but they do make those digs, and you know, you just take on the chin. You roll with the punches.
Yeah, but I agree. I've had to do the same thing myself, but I don't think they realize. Do you see what I'm saying? Like,
I get you.
They don't do it purposely, but they don't realize that you've put, I don't know, 4 years of fucking blood, sweat, and tears into this business, and you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning with an idea for it, and you know all you want in the fucking world is this thing to be successful, and then they walk in slightly pissed up, and they like take a dab. Do you know what I mean? Like, I wanted to ask the question because it happens with my boys from back home.
Yeah, it happens like on a weekly basis.
Yeah, of course.
Comments will be made. I also know that where I want to be going and what I want to be doing is so different than what my flatmate, for instance, wants to be doing. We have such different goals that he's just not on the same page with some of the things that I'm doing. And it's, I'm just about, you know, self-awareness and understanding that. So I don't let it get to me. You know, I'm quite good with just blocking that out. They're still good people. They're very supportive. Everyone makes a slight comment every now and then.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I just was intrigued. I thought it was just my mates being twats, but clearly it's everyone else
don't
as
worry.
Well.
Yeah,
that's chill. But you know, I've made such a brand of myself of starting a business for anything, for any reason, that literally we could walk past a fucking shop and they'd do a dig at me for not starting it or for starting it or for, you know what I mean? Like, it's just funny.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because anything for a tenner is like a joke. I mean, literally anything for a tenner.
Yeah. So you had it though throughout university because you were Pete Watson. You were Pete Watson, the main man on campus, starting throwing these court parties, inviting everyone in first, second, third year to a single accommodation block party. So you really put yourself out there, which obviously meant you were open to criticism.
A lot of it.
So like, but you get it from, and I think here's probably the difference, is that you've had it from people that you don't even know.
Yeah.
Like, just random as a uni. How do you find that?
That is true. The way I kind of solved that in my head was that I don't know who the fuck you are, mate.
Yeah,
that's kind of my internal mental dialogue. Like I remember a really weird, bizarre one when it was third year and it was five a side and we had a penalty shootout. I don't know if you because you were on a different team to us. Do you remember the
semi-finals?
Well, my penalty came up, right? So we're doing a penalty shootout. I don't know, we're semi-final, final, God knows where it is. And everyone's taking the penalties and there's no reaction, right? It's just like, oh. I come to take my penalty. There's fucking booing, mate, right? There's booing from the sides. There's jeering. There's a whole lot.
Yeah.
I missed this penalty, right? It was a shocker. The goalkeeper, I turned around, but someone filmed it so I could see it, you know, post. The goalkeeper's fucking giving me the wanker sign. The fucking lads on the side are like swearing at me. I'm sitting, walking back thinking, I don't even know who the fuck these people are.
Yeah.
It was mad. Like, we're going to go on a massive tangent now. I don't think I've ever done to hurt anyone. Like, you know me.
It's, mate, it's mob mentality. And it's,
it was, yeah, it's yeah.
obviously a lot easier to criticize. Do you remember the Lincoln University versus Bishop's, whatever that uni is? Do you remember that football game that was played at Lincoln City?
No.
So it was two universities playing at Lincoln City Football Club. The Lincoln uni students were all behind the net of the keeper from the other team. And the chance that he was getting, and you know, I mean, I was there and it's like, so, you know, you find it funny in the moment.
Yeah.
I look back, I'm like, Christ, that is not good. The things we were saying, just harsh. Just not needed.
But I did a talk at the university like 2 years back jumped back to talk about whatever. And I left. And I know someone who was like, who told me later, they were like, oh, basically after the lecture, Steph said to the seminar, oh, that pizza bit mama, isn't he? I literally just had it my whole fucking life. I literally don't understand it. I don't do anything apart from just be myself and I just get insulted for it. So I'd be myself even more.
Yeah, no, it's the best way to do. You're putting yourself out there. It's going to come with.
Yeah, I mean, I've always thought that. I don't think I've ever said this on the podcast and I might bring this up next episode, actually. About a year ago, I did a video saying, like, join my webinar, you know, to how to get through COVID. And I did it for my personal profile. And this guy, like, started writing a lot of nasty comments on it. And then he started going, oh, it's Pete Watson. He's such a bell and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, who the fuck is this guy? I looked up his name. And I half recognized it. So I went to an email account, my, like, you know, business email account. Yeah. And around about 8 years ago, I was sued by a PLC. And you might know who it is, so don't say the name. And he was the person at the PLC that clearly started the legal proceedings. And he'd held this grudge for 8 fucking years.
That's sad, isn't it?
And he then found an advert with my face on it and commented on it. How weird is that?
It's sad.
It's weird.
It's weird.
I'm just a kid trying to do my thing, man. I don't get it. But anyway, we won't make it. It's not about me. It's about you.
I've not experienced any of that yet. So is that what's to come?
I think it's because I'm just direct, aren't I? And I annoy people sometimes. I don't mean it, but I'm a bit disheveled. Anyway, I know you had a few things you wanted to say. Is there anything that I've missed out on this podcast, Dan?
No, I think I just came on to tell you what I'm doing. Hopefully some people find it interesting. And if anyone's got any questions, obviously they can ask me. I was going to flip it over to you now. I was going to become the podcaster.
Host
for today. I got 3 questions.
Okay, come on then, mate.
Number 1, if you were in my shoes, what's your next move?
I don't know how much cash you've got in the bank. And I also, if I was you.
So you've got enough cash in the bank.
Well, I'd scale my ads then.
Okay.
But if I was you, I would move from Manchester to Lincoln. and I would strong arm me into a deal of creating the Hook Group of Lincoln. And you'd get a juicy equity deal and a nice salary. And we'd have some fun on the way. That's what I would do if I was you.
Just want to make sure that's on record for everyone.
That is on the record. It's an offer. It's an offer that is opened for acceptance.
Question 2. You don't listen to podcasts or read books, do you?
No.
Okay, that was going to be what podcast or book has changed your perspective the most. But
okay, well, the book is The Slight Edge.
Slight Edge, great book, yeah.
The Lean Startup was probably the first book that opened my eyes to business because I read that years ago. And the Minimum Viable Product is probably the best that you could ever know.
It's the one they give you when you study any entrepreneurship course. That's Eric Ries, Lean Startup.
100%. Oversubscribed.
Not heard of that one.
It's by Priestley. Can't remember his first name now. Yeah. But in my book, which I hope did you buy a copy?
Yeah, I've got it. Don't worry, it's on the bookshelf.
Good man. I'll give you a signed copy when you come down.
It's not signed though. Yeah, I was wondering why it wasn't signed.
In my book, there's a chapter called "Congratulations, You're Now a Millionaire," and I basically talk about the idea that you only need 2 people to try buying your time, and your time becomes an unlimited value, i.e., the place you're going right now. And I both want to employ you, say. That person offers a certain number, I offer a certain number. That person offers a certain number, I offer a certain number. If we both hold out, you know, it goes to 1 million. So as long as you've got 2 people interested, you know, your value is unlimited. And oversubscribe, basically, it's not that theory. It's the theory that you want to get oversubscribed because then you can charge whatever you want. But yeah, my idea is that is, if you've got time, try and get 2 people to want to buy it and you can charge whatever you want. So back to offer number 1, but carry on.
Good. Question 3. What's Peter Watson's next big play?
My big play is
move.
It's the pharmacy, mate.
It's the pharmacy.
It's my...
How much did the podcast know about the pharmacy?
A reasonable amount, I think. I mean, as an avid listener, you'd know this. a reasonable amount.
Under the bus here.
Yeah, that's right, mate. I didn't really think you'd listen to this podcast. I mean, you had 3 years of me, bro.
No,
like,
I mean,
You had three years of me.
I actually have the last 10
episodes. What's your favorite episode?
favorite episode, the one on creators, support value creators. Bang, know the title.
Oh, fuck you, fair play.
Know the title.
Fair play.
Yeah.
I mean, when I asked that question,
and I was
a
big fan of the Sean Spooner one. Sean Spooner episode.
Spooner listens to the podcast, I think. So, Spooner, you can get Higginson on your podcast. And I can't even remember my podcast titles. So the fact you pulled that out of the bag is beyond me.
I've got it up on my phone next.
You listened to it before you came on. It's only 15 minutes. It's fine. So it's the pharmacy, man. I'm either going to lose six figures or make, you know, eight, basically. Don't know. We'll see what happens. I'm confident in the concept. I'm nervous in the execution. And I said, and the bit I get nervous with businesses, because we've done it so many times now, is I'm really confident until we press live. And then it's like, does the market care? Have I played it wrong? And I shit myself.
Yeah.
Especially when there's been so much graft in the pharmacy. I mean, it's been going on for about a year and a half.
Is your launch strategy always based around Facebook? Is that still like paid ads as your...
Well, most of our businesses, like Fletcher Longstaff, which is a really, really good business, it's do seven figures this year. It's 12 months old, if that. We're running no ads. None, because the business can't cope with it.
Where do you get your customers from? Is it all
We bought a brand.
Yeah. Okay.
And we did a Mike Ashley, and I genuinely believe, I now realize why Mike Ashley is so rich. Because people have spent, you know, hundreds of millions or millions or tens of millions investing in a brand for so long. The brand then goes bust and Mike actually buys it. But you've still got the credibility of that brand over the 100 million they spent on it. You know, Diadora, I think, is owned by Mike. I'm not really sure, but let's say Diadora. You know, how many years have they been around building their brand? You know, that's going to sell pairs of socks. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's going to sell T-shirts. And I just took that idea with that business, and it proved incredibly well. And I said to the MD literally last week, I said, like, do you want the ads on? He's like, no, I fucking don't. Like, so
it's a good place to be, isn't it?
Yeah. So, you know, I think the idea of buying brands is going to be my, like, I'm obsessed with Little Chef. I think Little Chef is a brand that hasn't been squeezed yet.
Interesting.
Right, I believe
they're still around.
Well, someone bought the trademark and the brand. That's all they
really
bought. Yeah, and I think you could turn Little Chef into a Greggs equivalent. You know, one on every single high street.
Yeah.
And I think you'd smash it, because the people who remember Little Chef as a good era are now getting families. And I think there's something in it. So Little Chef.
No, I agree. That's really cool. A cool thought.
Yeah, Little Chef is my, but Brad, obviously, who I do everything with business wise, he fucking hates that idea.
I get a sense of a lot of your and Brad's relationship is just ideas. No, go away.
It is, mate. It actually is. Yeah. But he lets me go every now and again and do one that fails. Like, you know, he lets me do like an e-com and it fails. So yeah, then he knows next time he can be like, oh, I told you not to do that one. But now he's a good egg. He lets me do what I want, really.
Yeah. I will say, actually, that just before we wrap it up, I don't really have a co-founder. Mm. And I see the relationship you have with Brad and other people who I know who have co-founders. I think it's such a crucial thing to have a co-founder.
Yeah.
And it is something that would be something I'd be looking for bit down the line, because I think it's so necessary.
Yeah, I think about this sometimes. Well, when I get asked it, would I be where I am now without Brad? I wouldn't be where I am right now. Absolutely not. Where I probably would be is I'd probably have an average marketing agency doing okay, but there would be no sort of, there'd be nothing else. There'd be no other opportunity. There'd be no side project. It'd be a very poorly run marketing agency. Which would pay me a good salary, no doubt, but that would be it. Whereas, you know, bringing Brad into the equation, having the organizational structure and having, you know, more of what he's really, really good at, allows me to just not have to worry about this, about stuff, you know. So, for example, he was on our mortgage company, Rippled. He was on the FD call last week because I was in a meeting, and he came over with like a list of things that he's put on and told the FD to sort out and how to sort out that financial report better for him and to show different mortgage brokers broken down and stuff. And also I hadn't even thought about. But because all he has to think about every day is that sort of stuff, he was well on it. So yeah, I'm in love with Brad, you know, in that sense that he's just incredible what he does. And no one really understands the level he goes into until A, they're a business owner themselves and they understand the bits that I don't have to think about, or B, they're within our structure, you know, like our FD, like just knows what Brad does. Like shouldn't even email me or message me, like just pointless task. Same with our like, you know, legal team or whatever. So yeah, he's insane. And I thought about it the other day actually, and Brad doesn't listen to this podcast. It's quite easy. I can always say things because Brad always says, no one in my office listens to my podcast because they say they hear enough of my shit every day anyway, which I completely agree with. But when we sorted out our equity and we, you know, I started at 70%, Brad started at six. No, I started at 60%. No, wait, 70-30, and Brad started at 60-40. And because he was a freelancer at the start, then I was basically giving him shares because he wanted, because he goes, oh, it's getting somewhere now. I don't want to be paid as equity. I don't want to be paid as a salary. I want to get paid as equity. I was like, okay, cool. And I was like, I'll give you 30%. He was like, no, I want 40%. I was like, no, 30%. And we argued for about 15 minutes. And looking back, Brad knew he had me over the barrel. Like, he knew that he, without him, I was going nowhere. Because we agreed in the end at, what did we agree on the end? 62-38, right? So I think I'm a great negotiator, right? I believe I'm a great negotiator. But Brad shifted me 8%. Do you know what I mean? Like he had me over a barrel.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I constantly think about how that percentage, how much that cost me. Anyway, I'm in love with the kid. It's fine. But yeah, so yeah, I don't know. I'd recommend everyone to find a business partner, but be very calculated in it. And I don't think Brad would have been my business partner unless, because he was in the business society with me, right? Do you remember that? And the only reason he was vice president is because Elliot stepped down. So Elliot would have been the vice president, and therefore you could argue that he actually would have had a more chance of being my business partner. You could argue.
Things would have to line up, but
yeah, of course.
Either way, I think what you guys and Brad are doing, it's obviously working very well.
It is insane, but I mean, like, the reason that we started this Strattle chatting then was because we were in the office of the Business Society together, planning for the next year of the Business Society. And I was like, I'm gonna start an agency. Do you want to do some work? That's how it started. Nice. Anyway, we've really gone on a fucking massive detour there.
It feels like a longer one than usual.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna do a 15-minute podcast, but any final words for anyone?
I know. I think we covered it all. Thanks for having me. It's been good. Well, it's been fun.
Thank you everyone for listening. I appreciate you as always, and I'll speak to you next week.